I want to talk about the precepts and also relate it to something that came up recently in what we call the Shosan ceremony. That's a ceremony, for those of you, I don't think you've all been up to Throstle, have you? No. It's a ceremony we do once or twice a month where the monks all go up and ask a question of one of the masters. Usually, if the abbot's there, then it's the abbot. Quite a formal way, and we try and do it, kind of boil down our question, ask it, get the answer and kind of and learn from it. And I've been boiling, sort of cooking an answer that Rav Master Daishin gave me about a month ago, and it seemed to sort of relate quite closely to the precepts as well, the whole attitude behind the precepts. And for me, there's something about the precepts which is about a shift in, almost like a turning around of a viewpoint. Because I think for so long, partly not even realising it perhaps, my relationship to what I call the world has been one of separation, I suppose. Like there's me and then there's the world out there. And on some level, seeing myself as a consumer of the world, you know, wanting to get something out of the world, or wanting to leave my mark on the world, and you know, that's the kind of ambition that can still be there as a monk, actually. It doesn't just sort of disappear. So it's an attitude of acquisition, really, acquisitiveness. And it seems the precepts point to a place where we have a completely different relationship with the world. We're not trying to get something out of it. It's more like we acknowledge we're part of it and we want to offer our lives, you know, realising we're part of it. It helps us realise that all we can really do is help, you know, make an offering. And that is based on some kind of insight into what the self is and what the world is. I think these insights sort of happen over a long period. This sense of a separate self gradually dissolves, for me anyway. Hopefully it's still gradually dissolving. And the sense of separation from the world at the same time and my relationship to it. And I think the precepts talk an awful lot about that relationship. In fact, probably all the precepts are about that. It does seem to relate to what Rav Master said during this Shosan, this kind of formal ceremony where we ask questions. And just a bit of background, I guess I was boiling down a question. My question in the end was, what is my real responsibility? And I think it's a question for lots of people, because I'm a monk. I'm, you know, in the guest department, so I look after... Technically, I'm actually responsible for everyone who comes... Being the most senior monk in the guest department, so that's a responsibility. And also, you know, I'm a son, I'm part of a family, so, you know, that's quite big for me at the moment. And the reason I went to France is my father is terminally ill, actually, and he, you know, it's going downhill quite rapidly. So, you know, there's a responsibility there as well. So I asked, what is my real responsibility? The Rav Master said something like, we are already entirely owned by the world. So, and then I think he said something like, so learn from being the world and learn what to do. Learn what your responsibility is from the world. Which is quite an unusual answer, isn't it? Because I'd expect him to say, oh, well, you know, you're a monk, or you're this, you're that, which is often what we'd like to grasp after, some sense of identity, but... To say I'm already entirely owned by the world is quite radical. It points to, you know, there isn't actually that separation. And perhaps in asking the question, there's still a sense of there's me that's responsible, and then there's the world out there. But he's saying, no, you're already completely owned by the world. And in a sense, the responsibility is still there, isn't it? But it's more like to act on that is more to do with feeling out what existence is asking me to do, recognising that I'm already in it, completely in it. And, you know, whether you're a monk or not, we're completely in the world in that sense. I mean, we physically live on what's offered. Mm. We're never apart. And I think you realise that just more and more deeply. And there's no difference between being a monk and being a layperson in that sense. You know, we're all, in a sense, totally reliant on what's given to us. So, you know, this is a bit about the connection between the precepts and that answer. And it does underlie all the precepts. You know, we had the precept, do not steal. So if we're already kind of owned by the world, if we're already in the world, part of it, how can we steal from the world in order to improve anything about ourselves? It's impossible. You start to see things more from that angle, and it is literally stealing from yourself. I mean, I know in practice we could actually, you know, someone could go next door and nick something and then use it. But on this level, when you start to realise the connection, it does literally feel more like you're taking something from yourself already, because there's no separate place we can take stuff from and give to ourselves. We're already right here. So how can we be proud when there's no sort of separate being that's could actually acquire anything, you know, could actually own something to be proud of? I think, you know, you apply this to when you start seeing things in this way, you can look at lots of the precepts in that way. And Dogen's commentary, which Rav Naden was reading out as precepts master, if you really study each one, you'll see that it's pointing at this position of non-duality. And you start to realise there's never a separation. So the level I'm at, the precepts both restrain me when I'm driven by fear, because, you know, I admit I am at times. So there is that aspect of, you know, do not be angry means, you know, literally, if I'm feeling grumpy and I'm when you take it out on someone, just don't do it, you know. Because I don't always have that realisation, that sense of the connection. It's not always. At times fear and whatever pulls me around. But also, precepts always do point to that, back to that perspective. So I think they work on those two levels simultaneously, you know. We need to be restrained, but if we study them, it's not just a matter of do not do this, you know, do not, you're a bad person, stop doing it. It's always pointing back to this non-duality, what our place is in the world, what our real responsibility is. And I guess it points to the futility of trying to be a consumer of the world, you know, trying to be something. Seeing that the result of that is always pain and confusion. I guess, we often end up talking a bit about anger and whether anger can ever be justified. I know that's been a difficult one for me. I came from a kind of socialist background where there was a lot of anger. I remember going on marches and, you know, for the miners and actually, I remember there's so much anger around. I wondered if it was good even at the time, in 1984. But, you know, I guess it may have, sometimes you could say it has some good effects. But just studying myself over years and years, and I would encourage you to study yourself, you know, you can only validate this kind of thing by what happens to yourself. And noticing, I mean, I do still get angry sometimes with the other monks, perhaps, or, you know, and I'm reasonably senior, so I could take it out on someone. But, you know, notice, how does it feel afterwards? You know, there's that energy sometimes. Oh yes, you know, that person needed to be told that. They were wrong, I was right, etc., etc. It feels good for about 5 minutes, or sometimes even less. But then how does it feel after that and the next day? How does it feel to get your own back on somebody? Doesn't But it doesn't feel like anything, does it, usually? If you actually study it, it just feels futile. There's nothing there. And what does the precept, Dogen's commentary on the precept, say? There is no retiring, no going, no truth, no lie. There is a brilliant sea of clouds. There is a dignified sea of clouds. There's no returning, no going, no truth, no lie. And I always struck, the translations we've got always use truth, capital T. No truth, capital T. Which is a bit strange. Thing. Well, you know, Buddhists, we uphold the truth. And on one level we do, you know, we do talk about the doctrine of Buddhism and I think it's true. But there's something else going on here. A person can be wrong on one level. They can be wrong about the doctrine. They can have wrong views. They can be deluded. There is such a thing as delusion. And I think I have to, for myself, I have to be realistic. Some things I've noticed being in France is that people don't talk about death, for example. Well, you know, lots of people, retired people, just find it so difficult to talk about dying and death. And it's a real shame, and that's a kind of delusion, I think. So I think we have to say there is such a thing as delusion that causes suffering and not cover that over. But even so, is that something to kind of get angry about? And Dogen's saying no. Even there is no truth to get angry about, to say, I know the truth, this, the other people do not. Because even though there is delusion, they are part of existence in a sense. More than just in a sense, they are expressing the truth as they are. So, you see what I mean? There's two levels to this. Someone can be deluded and it is the truth. And I think you have to work on both levels. And working on the level Dogen talks about, it enables you to maintain your respect, I think, for the other person. Perhaps that's the key thing. Because if you're angry, the respect tends to go out the window for a little while. But if you can respect the fact that someone may be, yes, they are deluded, it's not ideal, you'd rather they believed other things, but they still express the truth even in their suffering, and perhaps especially in their suffering, and you can respect them. And so it comes from a different place. I think you still need to offer help if you can, but it's not coming from that kind of anger. One thing that did strike me in relation to what Reverend Master said, and he's been talking a lot about Dogen, Great Master Dogen, and Uji, and not just Uji, chapter on being time. But he was reminding us of a quote from Genjo Kaan as well, which he keeps relating to his talks. And one of them is, to carry the self forward and illuminate myriad things is delusion. That myriad things come forth and illuminate the self is awakening. So, you know, the idea that we need to go forth and convert the world is illusion. To allow things to illuminate us is to be awakened. I don't think that's a one-off thing. I think that's a constant, really. And it is the same. It relates to that the precepts. I think it's best to, you know, reviewing my notes, I realised that all this could sound very passive and quietistic, really. You know, do you do anything? You know, do you just, is there any point in doing anything kind of thing? It doesn't mean that at all. I mean, to realise that we're totally part of the world, in the world, owned by the world, it doesn't mean we don't do anything. It's because we're part of the world that we do things. You know, we're alive. We function as part of existence, and we function as part of the connections between people. You know, I can function because the temple functions, because Reverend Master functions, because the guests come, and I'm part of that entire thing. But I'm still, it's doing, it's functioning. It's just less self-obsessed, I guess. It's hopefully. So it's not being passive. It's, you know, does our action come from really accepting the situation and listening, rather than, oh, I don't like this situation, I've got to change it. Because that's where it goes into anger, I think. But accepting a situation doesn't mean it should stay the same. Because existence is about movement. It's not, you know, if we're part of existence, then existence is a kind of flow. It's not a static thing. So there is that kind of faith that we are part of existence. We are called to help. You know, we are in a family or work. We're already involved, you know. So it's more like the offering of what can I do to help, I guess, rather than I don't like it. And one of my favourite quotes, I think, is from Shunryu Suzuki, which I think he just pops in somewhere, and he just says, rather than criticising, find out how to help. And I just realised afterwards that sums it up, really. And, you know, it is so easy to step back and criticise. It should be different. Maybe it should be. You know, maybe ideally it would be. But rather than just throwing criticism in, how do you actually help? It's a bit more down to earth.